Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Jovan C. Richards is the executive director of the Westchester County Democratic Committee here on Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com, produced by Shark Creative. That is Shark with a C, not a K. You see the orange logo on the big blue wall behind me here, and we are made possible by our good friends at places like Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. White Plains Hospital, at White Plains Hospital, a big thank you for all you've done throughout the COVID-19 pandemic here in 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon. Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction in Armont. Jovan C. Richards, what are the major issues facing the people of Westchester right now from a local standpoint, as seen by the County Democratic Party and Committee?
Well, I don't want to speak for the county party and committee. I'll speak on behalf of Jovan. I think right now we're facing just building back. You know, that is the biggest thing we're facing right now. We're facing ensuring that residents from Bedford, Yorktown, down to New Rochelle, Mamaroneck, Yonkers and White Plains, Mount Vernon, and Cortland, all are safe and sound and protected. And once we get a handle on the novel coronavirus, on COVID-19, the biggest worry is building back, making sure that we are sustainable for the future, that we can come back better, come back stronger, and actually have an opportunity to feel what we used to call normal again.
It's been a while.
It's been far too long.
Yeah. Even I get itchy sometimes too. And I've enjoyed, I have to say, being back home like this here and operating from a home studio. But there are times where you want to get out and take a ride to White Plains or go pick apples right now up in Croton. Yeah. Or maybe go over to, you know, the Cross County Shopping Center, and you got to think about everything you do, and that's no way to live.
You know, there's a part of me that knows that every time I leave this house, I look like a doctor ready for surgery, and I would absolutely love that. You know, I there are so many great smiles in the world, and we're losing so many of them due to masks and you know, a smile is contagious. One person can smile and the other person will smile right back. And we're losing so much of that light, that innocent light from just a simple, genuine smile.
Interpersonal reaction.
And it's so hard, you know, to smile for a picture with a mask on. I'll tell you, John, it's, you know, as electeds and as politicians and as party leaders, we do a lot of pictures and we do a lot of smiling, and you know, there's always a big smile behind every picture I've taken, but you would never know it because there's a mask on my face.
Right. Do you still get that urge too? And I think we've been trained to pull back on a handshake now. Still, hey. Ready to
yep,
shake hands?
Still,
I did it with somebody recently. He kind of looked at me like, I said, no offense, but I'm not offended if you stick out your arm first to me right now, and I'm sure one day we'll get back to being able to shake hands again. Schools have reopened, obviously, around Westchester and around New York State, and we see a mix of learning. We see a combination in the southern part of the county, basically all virtual learning. In New Rochelle, Yonkers, White Plains, you go further north, it's a mix of virtual and in-person learning. Am I out of my mind, and I've brought this up in other conversations with elected officials and other people, where a couple of people have said, all right, John, good idea, who pays for it? Am I wrong to suggest that every student in the state of New York, from kindergarten through high school, be equipped at home by the state education department to be able to learn virtually at home, regardless of what that student might need, knowing that some students are more financially prepared to pay for what they need and may not need any help, and some students may not be able to pay for anything at all? How do we make sure that, say, Mount Vernon, the kids in Mount Vernon, educationally are on the same level, on a par with the tools they need with Scarsdale, with Somers.
That's whew. John, you're making me feel like I should be collecting a check because I feel like I'm going into my press secretary mode. To answer your question, yes, there should be some initiative, some program that ensures that every student in New York is taken care of, that every student in New York has the opportunity to succeed educationally, that every New York student has the means and the methods for what would normally be a successful day of educational brilliance within a classroom. I think schools have worked immensely hard to do everything they can between obtaining, you know, tablets and laptops for students so they can learn at home. But, you know, not every house has internet. Some rural counties in New York don't even have broadband.
Right.
So there is so much
involved. How do we fix all that? And I know we've had no time really to do this. And yet, to me, every kid should be on an equal plane when it comes time to learn.
I don't have the answer for you. As I normally, as my press secretary, when I put my press secretary hat on, I would tell you, I'll take the question, John, and I'll get right back to you. But I can't even tell you I can take the question because I don't actually know if there is something that we can do, because who pays for it is the biggest question.
Right.
You know, do you burden the taxpayers right now during the most difficult time where most Americans in general are on unemployment? Do you risk doing that to the American people during the most difficult financial crisis since the Great Recession and before the Great Recession, the Great Depression? Do we do that? Does that help or hurt our economy moving forward? No one knows, John. No one knows. But the initiative and the thought the thought is important and the thought is necessary for our students and our students' education. You know, same thing with the college students. That does not, you know, let's not forget about them. College students have it just as hard, if not more, than, you know, your K through 12. College students are especially the non-freshmen are used to that social life. In college, you made mistakes, you grew up, you got older, you got better. You know, you learned who you were, you had life experiences that were in a controlled area. So you know, if you fell off, you had someone pick you back up. Right now, you don't have that in colleges right now. You have what we're doing right now is this virtual experience. And that's not the college experience that most people want or get. You know, you pay a lot of money to live at college. You know, when you want to move away, you know, you're 18, you just got into, as a New Yorker, you just got into, you know, let's say Boston College. You're excited to live the good Boston life, you know. You're excited for all the good Boston stuff.
But you don't root for the Red Sox or Patriots if you're up there.
God, you don't do that. Just
right?
Don't, please.
Or the Celtics.
That too. Oh my God. But you're excited for all that Boston has to encompass. And you don't get it because you're stuck in New York, going to school being taught by a Boston College professor.
Right.
It's not the same experience. And you
that's
know,
like, really, you know, if like people say I have a degree from Arizona State University online or University of Phoenix online. It's not the same, and I try to explain, it's not the same as being in a classroom and interacting and talking about things with people and discussing different ideas and saying, hey, you know, I never thought of that before. That's a pretty good idea. Had I not been here, I might have gone through 80 years of life and never figured that out or heard that. And that's,
you know, there's something exciting about, you know, texting your friend who is six decks across
from
you, and, you know, sneaking in a quick text, do you know the answer to question 31? It's something thrilling about that. You know, right. I'm not saying cheating is bad, cheating is wrong, right. But there's something thrilling about possibly getting caught by a real life person in a real life classroom, surrounded by real life classmates, outside of the virtual world.
Through the years in high school and in college too. So, but it's the things you experience when you go to school about being there. Now, I totally understand that we have to do this the way we are doing this now until maybe we get a vaccine. Unfortunately, we see a few days ago, I own a college now on a 2-week on-campus hiatus. Also, Marist College in Poughkeepsie because of outbreaks on both campuses. Hate for it to have to come to that, but that's where it is right now. And you do bring up a good point, too. I cut it off at K-12 before because we think when we're in college, we're a little bit more self-sufficient financially to do different things. But
absolutely,
from Marist have to be able somehow to be able to operate from home to be able to follow through with their courses. So should the state get involved with that too, equipping those students? They are students. They may be adult on paper, but in real life experience, they're not adults yet.
I think so. I think there needs to be a program for college students as well. You know, in the case for Iona, there are students in the dorms. You know, that's how the outbreak in Iona spread as quickly as it did. You know, there was a party, there was a gathering, you know, that's what you do when you're in the dorms. You know, you get a bunch of friends together, there's a keg normally, and I'm not saying I've experienced this, John, I'm just saying from what I understand, from what I've heard, this is how kids experience college, because I was always my head was always in a book, John. My head was always in a book.
I have no question about that.
But
how many parties have gotten?
I of course not. I was always
always
in the library.
Yep. I went to Fordham and people would say, "Hey, we don't see you at the Ramskeller on Friday or Saturday night." No, like I have things to do. I'm at school in order to learn. If I wanted to party, I wouldn't have gone to college. Just hung out in the street corner in the Bronx and just party there, you know, like we used to when we were 16, 17, 18 years old.
Exactly.
That's what it's about.
That's what I wanted. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. I know from day one, because you're a worldwide guy at the age of 29 and a half. Your experience scans the world and scans every facet of life. And I knew that about you when we first met in 2014 at WVOX. Now, you have the shirt on, unapologetically black. Social justice, police reform. Why does it take incidents like a George Floyd, like everything else we've seen in the past few months? One incident that really galled me was what happened in Rochester. Another one, what happened in Colorado, where you see young men who needed help in a different way than the supposed help or fake assistance that was provided them. And you look at that and you say, well, look at George Floyd and the other cops who stood around. And you say, like, doesn't anybody step in here and say, all right, time out, that's enough. You know, we do whatever happened, we do what we have to do from here and back off. Why does it take incidents like this to get people's attention? And I've used this terminology before. It seems like for a long time, we've said now, since the civil rights movement began, okay, we got into saying, okay, that's not right. But then we walk away and it happens again. Now people are stopping and saying, okay, that's not right, and let's do something about this.
The things that have happened in recent months, really years, when you go back all the way to, you know, Trayvon Martin, shouldn't have happened. It's really, it really just goes to show you that racism is still a relatively critical part of life. It still exists. You know, people think we live in this post-racial society where that's just not true. Police reform is necessary. In New York, we've begun the necessary fight to do better. I know states across this nation are doing the same.
And the governor had a mandate for every community in New York State to give
them a
reform package in their community by April of 2021.
Which a lot of Westchester municipalities are doing. You know, even some of the most non-progressive towns and cities, like, you know, Rye, are getting together and they're following this law.
Everybody's doing something around the county from everybody I speak
to. Which is necessary. It's absolutely necessary.
And everybody understands that, too. You know what? Let's stop and think here for a minute and take a look. You know what? This needs to be done.
I just my real problem is I hope they're doing it for the right reason and not just to secure the government money. That's it. You know,
I do get the impression that people do want to do this for the right reasons and make a difference at the same time.
That's my hope. That is my honest hope. You know, I don't want to see these police reform bills and these police reform initiatives being tackled and handled by people who don't believe in them. You know, I don't want to see I'm going to be blunt right now, John, and I apologize. I don't want to see a completely old white man police reform group or community policing group who are all ex-police officers that believe in everything that the police, everything that an officer does, everything that an officer does is right. Because at times, we have officers who are not doing the right things. There are bad cops, and they ruin good cops. There are bad cops who don't believe in community policing, who put on the badge and the gun to inflict a level of superiority around other people. They're there to be someone else's boss. They're there to be the community boss. They're not there to serve and protect. They're there for their own personal agenda and to collect a check and ensure that they understand more than the other person. Those cops ruin good cops. That's horrible. We need cops who are going to be for community and justice and fulfilling their oath of office, which is to protect and serve.
Is there a formula to ensure that the right people are hired to be cops? And I'm of the thought process that says not everyone is cut out to be a cop. Do we need to rethink who we hire and how we hire them? And we understand that when we hire someone, they're not in the middle of a life and death situation at that moment. And you never know how somebody's going to react in that kind of a situation. Yet, is there a way before somebody gets hired that we can tell how they might act or react?
I think there's definitely a way for community policing to be initiated before a hire. You know, everyone goes through interviews. Everyone goes through everything goes through a process.
Everybody can say whatever they like, what they think they need to say to get hired, too.
You know, police are political servants. You know, there's no reason why we elect city council members, but we don't have the opportunity to have a hearing on police, you know, in the hiring of police officers. We have hearings on appointing judges, but we don't have a hearing on appointing the people that inflict the execution on what a judge says. You know, a judge signs off on the warrant, but it's the police officer that does the execution of the warrant. You know, they're the hands-on part of the justice system. So I don't see why not. I don't see why there isn't a hearing, a community hearing on policing in terms of hiring and firing members of the police force, or any member of the Justice Department, or any member that serves justice in any way.
If you were putting together the prototypical model of a police reform commission, and you talk about bringing in all different parts of the community, what kind of people would you have on that commission to determine how police reform should work?
Well, first of all, you really do bring in every corner of the community. You know, you bring in the religious folks. You bring in, you know, in the terms of New Rochelle, you bring in a a reverend, you know.
And that's one thing everybody brings up that I talk to, bringing in people from the religious community.
Because it's vital. They the religious community represents a great deal of people in the community that sometimes feel ignored. And when you have a respective reverend or rabbi or a imam, a part of that group, they're going to represent their constituents, which is their congregation, and they're going to represent their religious views in the eyes of their God. So it's important. I know this church versus state, but it's important to have those views there. And while you're there, you ensure you have the most bipartisan and diverse. Diversity is key. Diversity is the most important. And I would even say diverse over bipartisan, but that's just me. You have the most diverse group of individuals ranging from, you know, voting age to young at heart. And I'm just trying to avoid saying old. But, you know, you have an 18-year-old all the way up to your retirement age, and everything in between. Every different opinion has to be in a room. You can't fill a room with one opinion because that doesn't do anything for the group. Doesn't do anything for the means of the organization. So my answer to your question is you start with your religious leaders, you bring in your community leaders and your activists, and you bring in someone from every corner of your county, or excuse me, of your community, in the sense of, you know, New York or New Rochelle. If I were the mayor, I would bring in my religious leaders. I would have a council member, which we have six. I would have a council member nominate one person from their council district, and then I would bring in a group of five or six more who are activists or
on the streets,
leaders, and bring in a diverse group of people. You know, New Rochelle is a melting pot, and I want to make sure that, you know, if I were in charge, I want to make sure that the committee looks like the community.
You're a wise man, Jovan, at the age of 29 and change. Leave us with some words of wisdom for voters in these, what we have to call, trying times in so many different ways, of all political stripes, during these emotionally charged times. What would you say to all Americans to make us know that everything is going to be okay?
Well, first of all, I would just tell people and remind folks, especially people of color, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people that died for you to have the right to vote. Please do not spit on the graves of men like John Lewis, who have bled, who have died.
Men like personally.
I've met him on numerous occasions.
On occasion, yep.
Men like, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., you know, men like Malcolm X, who have literally died just to fight to give black men and women the right to vote.
Did John Lewis impart words of wisdom to you when you met him?
I met John on numerous occasions. The first time I met John, we were supposed to sit with him for 10 minutes because he had a committee hearing. And he took us to that committee hearing, and he brought us to the Democratic Green Room.
And I know about that. He took the time with you and the group you were with to do
I was with him for almost 3 hours. And it didn't feel like 3 hours. It felt like 5 minutes because he had so many stories. He had so much life experience that you felt invested in him, and you felt wanted by him. And you felt heard by him, and you felt comforted to knowing that he was in the room. You know, when you think about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act that was just passed in the House and that needs to be passed in the Senate, you know that that bill comes with protections for black, brown, indigenous people to be protected while voting. And not only that, John Lewis was a fighter for all people. He was on the front lines for LGBTQ plus rights and ensuring that they had the right to vote and had the right to marry and have their civil liberties as well. So if I can leave you with anything, is my friends, vote and be active. Be an active voter. Don't be a voter only who comes out for presidential elections. Be the most active voter and member of society that you can be. We need you. And also, while we're going throughout COVID-19, do your best not to give it to anybody else or catch it yourself. Let's really get a handle on this, and let's be better community members and better neighbors, and not try to hand it off to each other. Let's really be cautious. So if you're not feeling well, stay home. Don't go out. And really do your part. So do your part on COVID-19 and do your part by voting in the upcoming election.
I've learned to like parts of my house that I didn't for years know existed being back home here. You know, like this room here. Oh, really? This existed, turned out to be a workable studio, as it turned out. So, you know, benefits, as they say, in the end, you should always go back home. And that's, you know, what I think is one of the keys in life. You learn that along the way, and especially in this situation here for about 8 months now that we've been dealing with. And hopefully we get that vaccine sometime soon. By the way, do you think the day will ever come nationally where we will have, regardless of whether you're a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, Right to Life, Working Families Party, Libertarian? I've always been of the train of thought that says that if you're not a registered voter and you wake up election day and you say, I want to vote today, be able to go to the polls and get yourself registered and vote on that day. I know there's opposition to it, and I don't understand why, because that's a fundamental right, the right to vote. If I just decided today I want to do it, I still have that right.
Well, some states have it. Right. New York does not.
Do not.
And I think New York, I think that'll be the next fight in voter rights. I think the most recent fights were a little more vital than day of registration. I think, you know, voting early, vote by mail, you know, absentee ballots, those options were a little more prevalent, and I think they were a little more necessary for the times. But I think that's going to be the next fight, same day registration.
By the way, talking about working from home, you seem to be very nicely entrenched at home there, right?
Oh, I am. I just moved into a new apartment, so I'm getting used to the new environment, while also, you know, really, really beginning to fall in love with the place. You know, obviously you fall in love with the place when it's bare and there's nothing here, but having furniture, having a couch.
Yeah, when you move everything in, could be a little different, right?
Exactly.
It looks so, like a great place to have a party once we can do that again.
I haven't had any form of housewarming yet. So once I get the green light, I'm going to come through with the housewarming. But until then, I'm comfortable in my own little neck of the woods.
Your humble abode, and that's the way exactly. It should be. Now, I know office might be something, running for political office might be something you have in mind one day. Would you like to announce your candidacy here for anything and give us the scoop, or not just yet?
So it's definitely going to be in the cards sooner or later. My plan is sooner than later. But as of right now, I have no open committees. I have not filed with any FEC or New York State or local board of elections.
You have no time anyway right now, right?
I don't sleep, John. I really don't. I'm always.
You and I are very alike. I see up on Facebook 2-3 in the morning. It's just you and me up there on the screen, right?
Sometimes it's just us,
yeah,
you know.
You and me, so doing whatever it is we have to do.
Exactly.
So, but that is something I think you'd like to do one day, right?
You know, I'll say this. I think Westchester and most, New Rochelle to be exact, really helped raise me, and I would love to do everything I can to give back to it.
When I was in eighth grade back there, a number of people wrote in my graduation book, and my teacher did too. She wrote, "I'll see you in the state house when you're governor one day." So, which was my plan originally. And then Watergate happened a couple of years later. And I went in a different direction after that. But like I said, when we opened up here, politics and the media, very well entrenched together. It's kind of like different forms of each other. And right now, you know, you're on that side of the microphone.
We're peanut butter and jelly. You know, we,
same thing.
We go together.
Right. People who are not in the business ask, like, why are you so involved the way you do? Why do you get into it the way you do? Why do you have to read 4 newspapers every day, 5 newspapers? You're online checking this, checking that. I mean, I go to work, I do my 9 to 5, I do whatever it is, and I come home. And I try to explain to them that those who make those decisions for us help determine what you and me both do for a living, regardless of what
absolutely
we decide to take our lives in. And maybe it might be a good idea if, come here, let me show you this, might get you a little more involved. But in the end, that's up to different people to determine what they want to do and how they want to live their lives. And you've taken yours in a certain direction here. And I got to compliment you again on that, because
you
are truly the prince, the king of Westchester. And what's your Twitter handle again?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ThePrince914. Facebook is at Jovan C. Richards.
That's J-O-V-A-N, Jovan C. Richards. For anyone who would like to contact you in your role as the executive director of the Westchester Democratic Committee, or for anything at all, what is your contact info?
They can reach out to me, anytime at jrichards@nysyd.org. That's nysyd.org. Jay Richards, that's my email. That's my political email.
Jovan C. Richards, again, our thanks to you for all of your time here today on Westchester Talk Radio. New Rochelle and the county of Westchester is so proud of you, and we know there's much more to come. Best of luck now
Thank
as
you.
The executive director of the Westchester Democratic Committee, and with everything else you do, too. With the young Democrats of Westchester in the Northeast region and around the country, all the best. And I know we'll talk again. And in our business, we may get to work together again. You know that, right?
I can't wait.
Yeah, can't wait, too. No doubt about that. Jovan C. Richards, Westchester Talk Radio. I'm John Marino, westchestertalkradio.com. That is produced by Shark Creative, by the way. That's Shark with a C, not a K. See the big orange and blue logo on the wall behind me here, made possible by our good friends at places like Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. You get Lipolis Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. White Plains Hospital, special thanks to all of our heroes at White Plains Hospital for all they have done throughout this COVID-19 pandemic here in 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon, Mark Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction in Armonk. Thank you one and all. I'm John Marino, Westchester Talk Radio. Catch all of our Westchester, Fairfield, Putnam, and Dutchess Talk Radio on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio.
Powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative.
And made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.